Coming up next from the Grassy Knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately, control over
you.
Coming up next from the Grassy Knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately, control over
you.
By this time, the suitcase was getting very heavy, so I rested on a grassy knoll and took a peek inside. As I opened it, out burst a fountain of many coloured butterflies, rainbow game counters, chess pieces, laughing cutlery, tiny chairs and tables, and flying plates covered with exotic fruit.
Well, hello. Did I play the intro enough times for you? There was a reason I did that, though. I screwed up. But actually, going back to the old intro about the terrifying Orwellian world, you know, that Harry did that intro, used that in his intro, we're gonna deal with a little Orwellianism as it relates to the wars that are going on. Just want to let you know, this is the Grassy Knoll. It is September 8th, 2006. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to play some audio as it relates to this Orwellian manipulation of we in the United States. And I've come to the conclusion we are the New World Order. We are it. Somebody sent me something along the other day, RB up in Canada, an Air Force white paper, and we're going to go over that some other time. I mean, how we're going to decide other countries' fates is just, I mean, I can't believe these people are thinking this way. All right, now, I'm going to try to get Barry Chamish on the line while I'm playing the audio. I know he's doing a show right now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to catch him as he's going to just be getting off the air now. But I will try to get Barry while we play this audio now. These are two clips. Freak Lemon set it down from Pennsylvania because of its Orwellian nature. And it is quite a chilling scenario for us. The first cut is about how they faked Al-Qaeda, and the second one is just about fake terror in general. So here we go. This is out of the UK, and this was sent along by Freak Lemon in Pennsylvania.
Even bin Laden's displays of strength for the Western media were faked. The fighters in this video had been hired for the day and told to bring their own weapons. For beyond his own small group, bin Laden had no formal organization, until the Americans invented one for him. In January 2001, a trial began in a Manhattan courtroom of four men accused of the embassy bombings in East Africa. But the Americans had also decided to prosecute bin Laden in his absence. But to do this under American law, the prosecutors needed evidence of a criminal organization, because as with the mafia, That would allow them to prosecute the head of the organization, even if he could not be linked directly to the crime. And the evidence for that organization was provided for them by an ex-associate of bin Laden's called Jamal Al-Fadl.
During the investigation of the 1998 bombings, there is a walk-in source, Jamal Al-Fadl, who's a Sudanese militant who was with bin Laden in the early 90s, who has been passed around a whole series of Middle Eastern secret services, none of whom want much to do with him, who ends up in America and is taken on by the American government, effectively, as a key prosecution witness, and given a huge amount of American taxpayers' money at the same time. His account is used as raw material to build up a picture of Al-Qaeda. The picture that the FBI want to build up is one that will fit the existing laws that they will have to use to prosecute those responsible for the bombing. Now, those laws were drawn up to counteract organised crime, the mafia, drugs crime, crimes where people being a member of an organisation is extremely important. You have to have an organisation to get a prosecution. And you have Al-Fadl and a number of other witnesses, a number of other sources, who are happy to feed into this, who've got material that, looked at in a certain way, can be seen to show this organisation's existence. You put the two together and you get what is the first bin Laden myth, the first Al-Qaeda myth. And because it's one of the first, it's extremely influential.
The picture Al-Fadl drew for the Americans of bin Laden was of an all-powerful figure at the head of a large terrorist network that had an organised hierarchy of control. He also said that bin Laden had given this network a name, Al-Qaeda. It was a dramatic and powerful picture of bin Laden, but it bore little relationship to the truth. The reality was that bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri had become the focus of a loose association of disillusioned Islamist militants who were attracted by the new strategy. But there was no organisation. These were militants who mostly planned their own operations and looked to bin Laden for funding and assistance. He was not their commander. There is also no evidence that bin Laden used the term Al-Qaeda to refer to the name of a group until after September the 11th, when he realised that this was the term the Americans had given him. In December, the Northern Alliance told the Americans that bin Laden was hiding in the mountains of Tora Bora. They were convinced they had found the heart of his organisation.
The search for Osama bin Laden, there was constant discussion about him hiding out in caves, and I think many times the American people have a perception that it's a little hole dug out of a side of a mountain.
Oh no.
This is it. This is a fortress.
Yes.
A complex, multi-tiered, bedrooms and offices on the top, as you can see. Secret exits on the side and on the bottom, cut deep to avoid thermal detection, a ventilation system to allow people to breathe and to carry on. The entrance is large enough to drive trucks and even tanks, even computer systems and telephone systems. It's a very sophisticated operation.
Oh, you bet. This is serious business. And there's not one of those. There are many of those.
For days, the Americans bombed the mountains at Tora Bora with the most powerful weapons they had. The Northern Alliance had been paid more than $1 million for their help and information. And now, their fighters set off up the mountains to storm bin Laden's fortress and bring back the Al-Qaeda terrorists and their leader.
All right, I'm going to interrupt this regularly scheduled program about Al-Qaeda and how it was faked, and we'll get that into its entirety at another time. Right now, we have Barry Chamish with us. He's out of New York. He's there for the 9/11 conference. Obviously, that date comes up on Monday. Barry, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
I know. I can't believe you just got done doing a radio interview, did you not?
Yeah. I just came off the American Freedom Network.
Okay.
Clay Powell.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's big in his circles. He asked me to be the editor of his new magazine and to go to New Mexico and work with him. And I have to make a decision. Quite frankly, I think it would be a little probably out of, I would be out of place there, okay? That's being kind. I wouldn't be in place there.
Did you not do a periodic show with somebody from that network? Do I remember that correctly?
I've done lots of interviews on that network. Look, they've got a real Jew problem, and no matter how they, until they understand me, until they understand where I'm coming from, I can't be too lackadaisical about these people. You know, they might really, really not like me. That's putting it kindly.
Well, you got a story.
I got a real problem. I'm between a rock and a hard place here.
Well, you're going to share, I guess, some of the horror stories, especially that being in Orlando. And I'm going to tell you right now that the 347 area code is from New York City, but it's not Manhattan.
Okay, I will get these people later.
Okay. All right, now, you want to tell, where do you want to start?
Well, I want to tell you what happened. Are we on the air live?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look, I went to Orlando for a conference. Now, I thought I could sell some books there. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's what I thought. The sponsor was something called the Battalions of Deborah, a Texas organization. I went there thinking I'd be a vendor and I'd sell my books. And by the way, I did quite well for the first day, all things considered. I sold a number of books. There was only one problem. There was no crowd. But the next day, no crowd. They promised me 2,000, maybe 150 shows, maybe, probably less. Next day, the Israelis go into action just like Israel. The Shabak is everywhere here. I mean, it's everywhere. And I know them, and I know them well. And I say to myself, what are they doing here? Now, we've got four members of the Knesset. They're all turncoats. They're fake right-wingers. Moody Zinberg, who I talked for quite a while, I mean, this man started off right-wing, and he ended up with an anti-religious party called Shinui. You have Benny Alone, who let his niece go to jail for conspiring to murder Rabin. The whole thing was a farce. In short, these dumb women from Texas actually believe that they are getting... They don't even know who these people are. They don't even know what was going on in their own conference. They provided the pastors, Pastor Hagee and other pastors. Look, here's what it was all about in short. You had no people there. They made the vendors shut down, forced us to shut down and sit and watch these worthless members of Knesset give speeches they didn't write. But there was a pattern that is extremely, extremely worrisome. Every speech has Israel attacking Iran. Every one of them. That, when you see a conference now that says stand with Israel, they mean Israel attacks Iran, loses a lot of people in the process. I mean, we can't even hold our own against Hezbollah, let alone Iran. They are priming the American people up, and it's the Israeli Secret Service, the Shabak. There was this, I forget his first name, Amichai Newman. I recognize him as Shabak from 10 miles away. I recognized him as Shabak. As soon as I started exposing these people, the trouble started. You don't expose them, they don't like it.
What kind of trouble?
I was thrown out. I was surrounded. Look, here's how they work. They have to use an American, so they got a really stupid one. Yeah, I guess she was like 22 years old, and they taught her lines. Now, remember, the Israeli Shabak, we know how it works. They surround you. 20 men, don't let you say a word. All they do is threaten you, not stop. Your word is worth nothing. Now, if you have a brain in your head, you don't fight back. Because these 20 people are going to pounce on you, and they're going to hurt you. Okay, so they got an American bimbo who, her first time in her life, she's working to see if the lines work. You know, I don't want to hear a word from you. This is the last call. If you say anything, we will have to phone a uniformed policeman. The whole crap. They want me out of there. I'm telling people this is a Shabak setup in the middle of Florida. In the middle of Florida, Israel is planning. I don't know if Israel is planning. I think planning is wrong. But I recognize another Israeli politician. He looks like Jack Gilford. It's Eliakim Rubenstein. He is the only so-called right-wing Israeli settler who denounces my writing. All the turncoats were there. All the turncoats. Now, what does this mean? It means these ladies, all 150 of them, believe Israel is a democracy because they're hearing so-called right-wing stuff from Israeli politicians. They don't realize that Israel is not a democracy. They have no power, these people. None whatsoever, but they are being used, and they're being used in the ugliest way possible to get a war going.
Well, who are the ones that are supposed to be the principals, both the United States and Israel?
The principals, Israel and Iran. Those are the principals.
What about the U.S.?
You know there's a role. You know there's going to be a big role. They're going to come and save Israel from destruction, I suppose. Look, there are these books out there. And you have to watch out now. Now I'm convinced the leadership of evangelical Christians is in the hands of people who are doing the dirty work of the Council of Foreign Relations, and, yep. And that would be Pastor Hagee. He's got a book where, lo and behold, Iran gets attacked. And lo and behold, that's what's happening. I think it's a bit not a coincidence that the book came out. I think it's not a coincidence that this conference was held. This was a dangerous... I never knew what fascism felt like. Okay? Until I got to Florida. I hid in my hotel room for 2 days, knowing they knew where I was. These people were so capable of doing me in. Now, I identified them, and by the way, the conference was such a flop that you would think nothing could, you would think it's over. You cannot change the American point of view, but it was filmed. It was filmed by Israel TV, by a guy named Nissan Chen. Nissan Chen, very interesting character in a way. He was the one, if you know a little bit of the Rabin assassination, there was a poster of Rabin in a Gestapo uniform distributed on September 24th, about a month and a half before his assassination, at a major rally in Jerusalem. He was given the poster to put on national TV by someone named Avishai Raviv. You have to read my books for this. The fact of the matter remains that these people are all tied up with the Rabin assassination. Nitzan Chen and Benny Elon were both working for the Shabak. Both of them. They're both filming this dreadful, dreadful flop of a meeting. And now I'm watching Nissan Khan, by the way, he's a religious guy, chasing women all over that meeting. Okay? I watch how he's filming it. He's filming it close up. There's no point filming the audience. There's too many empty seats.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to show this in Israel as a big, big movement in America to promote Israel's security. The meeting was stand with Israel. Believe me, if these people stood with Israel, we wouldn't last 1 second. But if you get a camera and you make like there are thousands of these meetings going on all through America, and the Israeli media is perfectly capable of doing that, well, maybe you can do something with this. This much is for certain. Folks in America, you've got to watch out for any meeting involving Israel. The Israeli secret services are there in mass. One of the secret service outfits was called Ami Tours. They supposedly do tours in Israel, and I think they will put you on a plane and do a tour for the Shabbat. In other words, what's the PIN number in a computer? What's the number of a computer called?
Oh, you got something else happening there?
No. What's the number of a computer called?
I don't know.
That's the name of the company. What is it? PI or UPI? They'll send messages to the waiting wall in Jerusalem by telegram. It's an Israeli Shabak. That's this guy Newman. Watch out for a guy named Amichai Newman. He calls himself Amish or something like that. I have it written down. I'll write it down. Israel and the United States are doing their version of 9/11 right now. Now, I will talk about the conference and what I'm about to say at this conference if you'd like, but it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
9/11, I always said I would never open my mouth that there were terrible Israeli connections to 9/11.
Right.
But I want to tell you about one, and the one I'm going to speak about, and that is the connection of Building 7.
Okay.
And United Airlines Flight 93.
Great.
Building 7 was dropped on September 11th in the afternoon. It was dropped in a perfect demolition. How did the explosives get that building?
Exactly.
Well, they got in there because Flight 93 was supposed to crash into the building, and he was supposed to get three planes crashing to the World Trade Center. Now, I got information, and I ignored it at the beginning, that the planes were remotely controlled,
mm-hmm.
and they override the plane's orienting system and crashed them into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, which makes a lot more sense than Arabs learning how to do this.
Right.
But the key, and this is something that's big, Flight 93 overrode this system and got the hell out of there. They were beating a path west instead of towards New York. It was shot down, by the way. There were witnesses that day, and that's how I do my writing. I look at what was said that day.
Mm-hmm.
There were witnesses that day that saw this plane shot down by a silver F-16. But that's not what the American public gets. Now, here's what the American public gets on Flight 93. At a certain point in the flight, the four terrorists holding box cutters take the strongest men in the plane. You have to be at least on the your college wrestling team, or they don't take you in the corner. All of these college athletes are now surrounded by four terrorists holding dreaded box cutters,
mm-hmm.
who warn them that the end is coming. You may use your cell phones to call your loved ones. So they pull out their cell phones and they call people on land, which is a great trick because cell phones don't work from 35,000 feet up.
That's right.
Okay, now these people really know how to put together a building demolition. They're not so good at script writers. But here's the big one. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they tried to say they were these air phones. So now you've got the athletes all in one corner, all reaching for air phones. I mean, it's absurd, but here's the beauty. One of the callers, he was a Jewish guy, his name was Jeff. It doesn't matter. He phones a black woman for a security firm on ground. And he says, pass this on to my wife, tell her I love her, all this stuff. And then she hears the magic words, let's get rolling, boys.
Yeah, it's Todd Beamer.
Pardon me?
I was supposed to be Todd Beamer.
Oh, it was Todd Beamer. Can you believe anybody could be such a bad screenwriter as to say, let's get rolling, boys, before they all jumped into the cockpit and crashed the plane? You cannot believe the stupidity of the actual fighters. By the way, I was told Dick Cheney ordered that plane down, and I got that from a very good source. I'm going to give the source away at the conference to one or two people. But neither here nor there. What a script. Let's get rolling, boys. Okay.
Well,
now, the plane, they found the tail 8 miles from the nose. So if that thing crashed on Earth, you saw a nose somehow or another flying through the air for another 8 miles. They did everything wrong because that plane was the only plane they caught on. That plane was running off to California anywhere. They had to knock it down, and then they had to knock down Building 7. That's where the plane was supposed to hit. And this is, and it's amazing. I discovered this, like it's the big 9/11 secret. Well, that happens to be the fact. And now Robert Bowman of Florida is actually quoting me and saying, yeah, they brought down 93 because it overrode the system and didn't crash into Building 7. Now, this is the beginning of something even worse because now we're talking about the ties between Silverstein and Ariel Sharon. There was a private meeting held by CFR member Naomi Rosenwald, I believe. I have it in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
They blocked all the traffic on Fifth Avenue so that Sharon could meet with Larry Silverstein. And we don't know. We don't know why they invited Silverstein. But he was discovered and told the press that, yes, I support the man. And that means getting the residents of Gush Katif, the Jews of Gaza, mm-hmm. getting them out of there. And his whole agenda, Larry Silverstein supports the whole agenda. Oh, my goodness gracious, what that means. It means that 9/11 is directly connected with the removal of Jews from Gush Katif. It means it's connected with everything the CFR stands for. was part of this. Now, there's one thing that you should all know. The grounds of 9/11, New York City, not the buildings, the grounds, were owned by a Jew named Frank Fowles. Lowry. I have all of this written for my speech. There's so much of it now, and you have to get used to it. The grounds were owned by an Australian Israeli, Frank Lowy is his name. He was well taken care of after the buildings fell. The biggest mistake that occurred was number one, Flight 93, number two, Building 7, and they're the exact same mistake. That was the plane that didn't bring down the building. And that is going to bring up 9/11, or it's not, but that's the mistake they made.
Well, I'm glad you brought up 93. To backtrack a little bit, one of the things that's strange is, you are right, when you go back and you find the first accounts of whatever the event is, the New York Times, and I've said this before on the show, quoted Elizabeth Glick, Jeremy Glick's wife, as having a conversation several times, having it broken off, and having a conference call with police on the ground, and this would be in New Jersey, and it was all over a cell phone, and it said from 35,000 feet. That's what the report said. However, 2 years later, in the summer of 2004, Reader's Digest revisits Elizabeth Glick, and she gives her story 2 years later or 3 years later, and then she says, oh, he wasn't on a cell phone, he was on a CPAC phone. Now, we got a problem here, right? Because she goes on ad infinitum about the cell phone call she had with Jeremy, you know, 2 days after the event, or a day after the event in the New York Times. Now, 3 years later, it's on a cell phone. So where's the lie? And who's forcing it?
Well, again, Jeremy Glick, I assume, is Jewish. I think that's where I made a mistake a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay. You're referring to him?
Yeah, I think so. It doesn't matter. There's so many partners in this. When I get my book written, I'll be a lot smarter. Right now, I got a conference in New York. I'm speaking tomorrow afternoon at the community church on 35th between Park and Madison, and I'm going to be speaking not just about Building 7. I'm going to be speaking about what the plans were, and here's the plan. I think I did tell you this. I spoke with Ron Pundak. He was the negotiator of Oslo.
Right.
One of the two. And I told you, he told me many things. I interviewed him for 2 hours, but he said one thing that I'll never forget because it made no sense at the time. He said, my boss, his boss is Yossi Beilin. He says, my boss doesn't believe in borders. Borders cause war. When Oslo's finished, we're not going to have borders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just thought to myself, well, okay, that's great. Then we won't have Israel. Okay, well, what's he talking about? And then I understood what he was talking about, and it's a terrifying thing. But he said when Oslo is finished, the Middle East will not have any borders. We're all going to be a very happy group of people. We're going to be in a trading bloc. And the Israeli people will supply motels and will supply gas stations for this beautiful trading bloc. And then I started screeching. I started screeching for the world to hear. These men are mad. You don't understand. These men are mad. They're going to destroy Israel. They're going to remove our borders. And they're going to come into this area. They're going to do something crazy in the millennium here so that they send troops all through the Middle East. And they're going to control a trading block here. And I must add, I wrote that in 1994. I think I did a pretty good job.
Well, I mean, you know the same thing is happening here, or maybe you don't, but...
I do know.
Yeah. The CFR is very much at work with their partners in Mexico and Canada to create this, North American Union, and nobody knows a thing about it. The mainstream news won't touch it, and it goes on. My only question is how much warfare or fighting is going to be before this finally gets...
Oh, Keith, let's forget it. Who won the game? Was it Miami yesterday?
I fell asleep.
Listen, that's always... Watch the football game. Forget everything else. Look, I've lost my family. Israel would be a terrible place for me to go. It would probably kill me. What do you want from me? I probably don't have long for this life. There are too many people now that want to be kept quiet. What are we going to do? I've done everything a human being could do. Last night I gave a speech to rich Jews from New Jersey. There's nothing that can be done. They're too materialistic. They don't want to know. To change their view would take 100 lives of me, and I can't do it. So I'm complaining, but I'm going to go down with knowledge. Building 7 was supposed to be destroyed. There was supposed to be an amazing World Trade Center display that day. 3 buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, so they had to bring it down that afternoon. There was no choice. The explosives were in the building. They brought it down beautifully in the shadows of the smoldering towers. They brought it down. And that was the one question I asked my people yesterday. I said, where did they get the explosives from? Said, where did the... Well, how come the building was filled with explosives? I didn't have an answer for that. Everyone knew the explosives had to be in the building. Everyone knew that, but they didn't have an answer what they were doing inside that building.
Well, what makes it even more bizarre is when Silverstein says during that PBS documentary...
We got to pull it.
Huh? Yeah?
We got to pull it. The fire department phoned and said the fire is a little out of control. I said, we better pull it. Sure, we better pull it. 87 floors, and you just pull it. Like, that's an easy thing to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would make you think then that every skyscraper down there was built with explosives just in case. I mean, it's crazy. But, I mean, for him to say that...
Silverstein was in on the plans big time.
Sure, sure.
And he met with Sharon big time at the home of a CFR member. Do you know what? All of that could be coincidence, but I've learned something in my work. When you have these same players over and over and over and over and over and over, well, guess what? It's not coincidence anymore.
Uh-huh.
Silverstein was in on the plan. He got $7.2 billion for both buildings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The ground, the real estate, the property was owned by Frank Lowy and Israeli. And you know what? Michael Chertoff is half Israeli, and he's Mossad, too. So you even have the FEMA department run by Israel right now. You got a big problem here. I saw it in Orlando. These are not necessarily good people for Israel. In fact, I think they're very, very bad for Israel. You've got some very, very stupid women from Texas thinking they're helping Israel. They didn't even know who the politicians were. They didn't even know who they were. I'm blabbing away to Moody Zinberg. I know the guy. I quoted him a million times. I say to him, you're still in politics? He says, no, I'm in private business. What private business? The guy doesn't have the brains to be in a private business. He was in the, Raffaele Tanz party. I forget the name, I forget everything. They backed out. They were a far right wing party who supported Rabin. Two of them went over to Rabin and gave him a Jewish majority for Oslo. Raful Eitan was killed in a tsunami, believe it or not, in Ashdod. I wrote about that widely recently. They killed him off a couple of years ago. Gonen Segev is now sitting in jail for bringing into the country thousands of ecstasy pills from Holland. We're talking about an Israeli government run by criminals. And these people, every word they said, these horribly scripted speeches, they were standing and applauding them. Luckily, there were only 150 people, and the place looked pretty darn empty.
But, you know, Barry, you have to clear something up for me. The thing is, what is the objective of these hawks in the United States that you've run into?
As I said, you've got to prepare the people for an attack in Iran. You've got to prepare the people for the American troops to come and save Israel. I would like to know what a Pastor Hagee says to the Israeli members of Knesset when he's in private meetings. But no question about it, Iran is the target. That's what every speech said, Iran is the target.
All right, because we've got a couple of things going on here. We've got a possibility of a greater conflagration in the Middle East, and we also have, like as you said, the regionalization. But what I'm thinking is going to happen is that's going to be in the works, but it's going to be after another period of catastrophic warfare, I think, where finally people...
Well, as I said, that's what every speech was. Go to my website, people, the Barry Kamish website.com, thebarryjamishwebsite.com. Have a look at my latest, I think you can see what they're doing. They're using Israel to start the Third World War. I think that's obvious enough. They're using these members of Knesset who are turncoats. They're absolute turncoats.
Well, you know, understand something, too, that there was legislation on the Hill back in March of 2003 that was already yapping about Iran and how it had to be democratized. So before we even dropped bombs in Iraq, they were already talking about doing something with Iran. And I couldn't believe it.
You put the mullahs in power. I told you my story with Daniel Moynihan. I met him in 1979, just as the Shah was overtaken. I said, "Guy, this Iran has got 75, 100 of your F-15s, of your F-16s. You're going to put up with them getting the best army in the whole Middle East?" And Moynihan, tall guy with red Irish facial skin, taps me on the shoulder and says, "We know, son, we know." Whatever that meant. Okay, somebody put Khomeini in power. Somebody dropped the Shah. Somebody brought him to America to die. All of this is working like a charm. Evil is much stronger than good right down the planet. And I'll tell you something, good people, and I met them last night in the home I am, they're fine people. They're all going to be in trouble.
Well,
I'm not going to be in trouble. I'm in the worst trouble of everybody. But nonetheless, I don't even know why I'm going out the limb anymore. I, honest to goodness. At first, being famous was fun in Israel. And then it stopped being fun. The fact of the matter is I've staked my life for the Jewish people and I've got nothing back, I think. I think there's a chance I have nothing back. I'm going to New York today. I'm meeting Alex Jones and Jack Blunt and these radio people who have supported me over the years, so that should be fun. But it's not as fun as being around my family and being secure in a country that I trust. It's heartbreaking to discover all this about Israel. Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. That's the country I went to war for. That's the country I got shot at for and shelled and everything.
Well, the last time we spoke, one of the last things we said, I had said to you that have you at all gauged what the attitude is here in the United States, and especially amongst the supposed moral majority or moral morons, with them wanting
to... going to their corporate restaurants, and they're eating food baked in hydrogenated oil, and they're clogging up their arteries, and there is no attitude. Everyone's playing ball.
Mm-hmm. I just can't find... I can't see myself, though, being a Christian, by the way, where Christians should ever, especially New Testament Christians, should ever, ever sanction violence. And even if they think it's for a good reason, I see precedent.
I never felt fascism before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's not that I couldn't walk around. The excuse given to me to throw me out was I wouldn't sit in the room and listen to the speeches. Okay? I said, "I don't want to listen to the speeches. They're boring." And that was enough to throw me out. But it doesn't matter. They're looking for any excuse. These people, do you ever hear of something called Battalion of Deborah? Just know they're being used. If you ever hear of Pastor Hagee, just know he's being used. Hagee actually is probably a user as well. The fact remains that the people standing by Israel are not standing by Israel. And the worst thing about the Christian side of it, every vendor was missionizing.
Mm-hmm.
They want a Christian Israel. Now, Israel doesn't want to be a Christian Israel, but that's what they were selling, were these missionizing projects. We've got a major problem. The Israeli right is making friends with anyone who will support them. And the people who support them truly, truly don't especially like Judaism without Jesus. It's not something they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Israel, it's been, I'm telling you something about Israel. The country will not survive the next round. The next round, the Iranian War Council are figuring out the range of missiles 250 miles. Let's make Tel Aviv hop. Let's make the airport hop. We're standing right now behind a wall of 35 kilometers of Italian, Spanish, and French Vatican troops. We can make all of Israel uninhabitable. And you know what? What happened to the atomic option? I don't see Israel pulling out its atomic option.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pull up one fantastic thing. Maybe this atomic option was all a bluff. Yeah, Haifa was abandoned for a month. Missiles are falling over the north, and nobody even opens up their mouth and says, you know, we've got a very nasty weapon. If you don't cut this out, where did that go?
Mm-hmm. I'm just asking questions now. Well, I don't think it's a bluff. I feel that that's probably going to be the next bridge that's crossed, and that's going to open up a new chapter. I mean, I really do believe we are involved with brinksmanship right now, and I don't think I'm being melodramatic or overstating the situation. And we talked, again, about CFR member Brzezinski writing that book in 97, Barry.
Yeah.
And is he so prescient that he knows that the United States is going to go at it with Iran and then get China and Russia involved? You know, it's...
They knew. What about Ben-Gurion writing
sure.
in 1962 in Look magazine
mm-hmm.
where he says the Europeans are going to be living in a union,
that's
America's
right.
going to go socialist, there's going to be a new Supreme Court building built in Jerusalem where the world are going to take their problems to. Well, everything, including the Supreme Court building, which is a Masonic temple built by the Rothschilds, is all built... He said Russia is going to go down and it's going to be more democratic and Western Europe is going to be one ally and one... He knew it all.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what they were doing. They knew it.
Well, you know, I don't mean to be rude. I'm flipping through some pages because his statements were in the January, I think it was 16th issue
62.
In 1962 of... of Look
magazine.
And, and if you will allow me, here's what he said. The image of the world... In 1987, is traced in my imagination. That's a bunk. That's a lot of baloney. It's my imagination. The Cold War will be a thing of the past. Internal pressure of the constantly growing intelligentsia in Russia for more freedom and the pressure of the masses for raising their living standards may lead to a gradual democratization of the Soviet Union. On the other hand, the increasing influence of the workers and farmers and the rising political importance of men of science may transform the United States into a welfare state with a planned economy. Bingo! Western and Eastern Europe will become a federation of autonomous states having a socialist and democratic regime. You got that one right.
I know.
With the exception of the USSR as a federated Eurasian state, all other continents will become united in a world alliance, and there's your regionalization, Barry, at whose
yep.
disposal will be an international police force. All armies will be abolished, and here we go, there will be no more wars. In Jerusalem, the United Nations, a truly United Nations, will build a shrine of the prophets to serve the federated union of all continents. This will be the seat of the Supreme Court of Mankind to settle all controversies among the federated continents, as prophesied by Isaiah. Now, is that thing up already, would you say?
Of course it's up. I've sent it all over the website.
Oh, is that...
To all my readers. Look, go onto Google and write Jerusalem Supreme Court Building,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that, I don't know, every Masonic symbol
yep.
in the world is in there.
Yes.
You climb the 30 steps until you get to the last three steps towards illumination. Go and
sure.
on the internet, write Jerusalem Supreme Court Building pictures, and you will see, you know what, I have an even better place, the Golden Report. Jerry Goldenstein has pictures. Just go Jerusalem Supreme Court Building, the Golden Report,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get everything you need. Everything that Ben-Gurion said has come
right.
true.
And who,
all you needed in the United States was to make the Third World happen was a little incident at the World Trade Center building.
Also,
and that's all you needed.
Also, who funded the building of that facility?
Well, again, the Port Authority was owned by the Rockefeller.
Oh, no, I mean the Supreme Court. In,
the Rothschild.
Right, exactly. Can I ask you something? I mean, I've never asked you this before.
Yeah.
What do you make out of the whole business about the Balfour Declaration, obviously the labor Zionists out of Britain as well, having their hand basically to destabilize that whole area for over a century? I mean, how do you look at Rothschild as an Israeli?
Well, the Rothschilds are family with branches. I believe it was the French Rothschilds that built the Supreme Court building. But neither here nor there. We know them as Sabbatean Jews, Sabbateans. We know they despise the Jewish religion. We know that they hate everything about Judaism to the point where terrible, terrible deals were made with the Nazis. By the way, read Ben Heck's Perfidy and read the transfer agreement.
Right.
Then later on, I'll, in some other broadcast, I'll tell you about Wise Mendel's book and Rabbi Joel Block's book. But read the transfer agreement. That's Edwin...
Edwin Black.
Thank goodness. And you're going to find out that these people who founded Israel, who are destroying the religious people today, destroying them. Well, what do you know? These people hate Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor for them to kill Jews. They got the German government, they got Hitler to send them as many German Jews as they could after going through indoctrination camps. This was the racially perfect Jew they wanted, the German Jews. Then they got the British to close the gates, and all of European Jews were trapped for the Nazis to slaughter. It's an awful story, an awful story.
And one other thing I'm concerned about, I'm looking for an email from a listener who happens to be, if you believe in such things, and I happen to, he is a born-again Jew, okay?
Oh, sure. Balat Tshuva.
All right, well, he's accepted Jesus Christ after having been in Judaism.
Oh, he's accepted Jesus Christ, he's not Jew.
Okay. Well, he once was. But he's also...
Well, now he's not... The difference between Jews and Christians are very straightforward. There's not a rabbi in the world who disagrees with this. The Christians accept Christ, and the Jews don't.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm just taking a look, and I'm going to paraphrase it. Oh, I see what... All right, here we go. He said, as we talked about last time, many of these faux patriots or false patriots are anti-Israel and see them as part of the neocon cabal. Also, I've noticed that many of these faux patriots are women, very opinionated and pushing around a lot of power.
Oh, right. Very interesting.
Well, what do you think about that? And
very
you...
interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, he's right about that. I'll tell you that. He's got it down perfect. Look, you've got, as I said, the women of the Battalions of Deborah, they are very opinionated. They know nothing. They don't even know who they invite to their own conference. They don't even have the background on these people. They say, well, their speeches were written for them, and they stand up and applaud. They're robots. He's right. He's right. Now we have to get them to come back to Judaism. And everything's perfect, because these women are trying to get Jews to be like he is.
Yeah. Now, one other thing now. Are you starting to see people get confused, and they don't know if they're against Israelis or against those who believe in Judaism, or whether, you know, whatever it is. But what I'm starting to hear more and more, Barry, and that is everything is those Jews this, those Jews that. They don't make any distinction.
It's not the Jews. I keep trying to say the Jews are going to get wiped out in Israel again. We're going to have another Holocaust there. And they've got a nice wall. We're all trapped behind this wall. It's now Poland, 1940. Everything is set up for the Jews to get wiped out again. It's not the Jews. Now, I told you this about the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm going to say it again. Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
A cult in Turkey called the Donma cult decided that was a secret message and that we're going to convert to Islam but believe in our Sabbateanism secretly. Every time it seems that the Council on Foreign Relations puts a man up for power, some journalist discovers something they can't believe. John Kerry didn't know his father was a Jew. Well, who doesn't know what their father is?
I know.
Of course, Madeleine Albright doesn't know. She was raised by nothing but Jews. Okay? And, of course, Wesley Clark discovers his father's a Jew when he's killing many thousands of Bosnians for the New World Order. The Council on Foreign Relations are filled with people who are Christians, but at one point or another... They're Sabbateans, okay? And by the way, the other word is Frankist. There was a second Messiah, believe it or not, Jacob Frank.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who worked with the Rothschilds and Adam Weishaupt. They met in Frankfurt in 1785 to start all these awful, awful conspiracies. But the fact remains that Jews, the worst enemy of the Jews, are these Sabbateans or Frankists. They have killed... What? There should be in the world now at least 60 million Jews. since 1880, the Holocaust, the pogroms, the assimilation, your friend writing emails have destroyed the Jewish population. Destroyed it.
Well, one of the things that bothers me, and again, I don't know if you fathom this at all, but I'm, you know, when I hear what I hear, I read what I read, and I'm starting just to hear the kind of talk that I don't know how this kind of thing distinguishes us from the spirit of Nazism. I mean, I'm waiting for people to start talking in this country about the final solution.
Well, I'll tell you this, they don't have to do it here. They'll do it in the Middle East when the Iranians stick anthrax on the heads of their missiles and throw them behind that wall. You won't even have to worry about here. First you kill the half the Jews of the world living in Israel. And by the way, they are promoting the religious Jews from France, Britain, America, just more Jews to kill. And, I mean, you've got to be nuts to move to Israel now. It's got no economy. It's got a horrible government that will hurt you, but they're doing it. Now, in America, it'll be after the Iranians take care of the Israeli Jews that the American Jews, oh, boy, they don't know. And, by the way, no one is going to say Barry Chambers was right. No one's going to say a thing like that. Go to my website. Have a look at it. TheBarryChambersWebsite.com. Okay? Have a look at the information that I've been trying to tell American Jews. I had a meeting last night. I don't know why they think, but they're in total denial.
Well, have you had a chance to sit down and write? Are you going to chronicle what's happening and your experiences since you've been over here?
No, I don't think I'm going to be around long enough. Everything I've written is a chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, there are people now who've had it with me. And Israel is a very nasty place. They killed friends of mine. They killed friends of mine. They killed my rabbi friends. They killed Rabbi Shapiro. They killed Adir Zeek, a great journalist. The Jews did. I don't care if Arabs pulled the trigger. I don't care if somebody got a disease. It was done deliberately. And now I just went through a very bad period. A car crash that is not explainable in normal human terms. Just everything in sight has been bad for me. And I don't know if I'm going to survive. These guys are so powerful. And what have I got, really? Mm-hmm. What have we got? They're going to shut down your airwaves maybe someday the way they shut down my voice. My voice is no good. I still talk because I overcome my throat, but that stroke did my voice in. I just didn't let it destroy me or I'd have no income and I'd have nothing to say to anyone. But my beautiful voice is gone. This is just the way it is. I should have died in the hospital. They revived me. 3 times they told me they revived me, that my lungs collapsed. I should have died, but I didn't. Next time, I assume they're just going to do it already.
All right, let me ask you one last thing, and I'll let you go. I know you've had some kind of warning already.
No, don't let me go. Your pleasure.
Well, I appreciate that. And I want to know something, because the last time it was a little iffy, but you've mentioned selling books. Is the book situation a little better than it was the last time, as far as supply?
I survive. I got some books to take to New York. I'm giving a speech at a conference where there may be 600 people. Let's hope.
All right, Barry, listen, I want to thank you very much for keeping in touch. I'm sorry I didn't return that call sooner. Maybe you wanted me to come to Orlando and knock a couple of people out for you.
Oh, yeah. anything to save me from these people. I didn't leave the hotel for 2 days. I was terrified.
Well, listen, I hope things fare better for you. It'll be interesting to see what takes place over this weekend and, of course, on Monday. So take care of yourself. We thank you for being with us.
Thank you for another great interview.
All right. God bless you. Take care, Barry.
See you then.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, I've let Barry go a little earlier because he hit on a couple of things, and one of them I want to address, and that the fact is you're dealing with very powerful people. Now, I'm going to say something before I play this cut. It's 5 minutes and 15 seconds. It is George Carlin, and it is rough. So if you're sitting and you're listening in at work, you might want to turn the volume down a little bit or plug the headphones in, but it's worth hearing because this is the truth, and even though Carlin is using obscenity, it's an obscene situation. But what he speaks is the truth, and I think we all should hear it. So I'm going to play it, and like I said, bear with me. It's foul. You don't want to listen. Go ahead. But, you know, to me, there's nothing more obscene than what he's talking about as far as what's happening to us. This is George Carlin. Well, I'm hoping it's George Carlin. Oh, there it is. Okay, we got it. Hang with me. I have some dead air at the beginning of it, but you're going to hear George Carlin on the way things really are.
Professional compulsive consumers. That's their, they think of that as their national pride. It's their civic duty. Consumption. It's the new national pastime. Fuck baseball. It's consumption. The only true lasting American value that's left, buying things. Buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. Money they don't have on things they don't need. So they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too fucking bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They said we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that and the kids still can't pass the test. They say, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. That's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a fucking pencil. Got a pencil? Get the fuck in there. It's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education! Politicians know that word. They use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things. The flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start? Left behind? Someone's losing fucking ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, that... The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media news, all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later. Because they own this fucking place. It's a big club. And you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on, good, honest, hard-working people continue, these are people of modest means, continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Well, there it goes. Can't say it any better than that, and had to be said.